Hey, 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 it's B-Rad Celebrity Hairstylist here, your host of the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast, a platform that allows the voices of the beauty industry to empower with the spoken word. Thank you for joining us on today's show. We're currently at over 58,400 downloads, thanks to you, and on over 40 plus podcast platforms, including Amazon Music, Audible, and Spotify. A beauty bar that focuses on passion, all things beauty. Marrying Impaired Artistry Institute with Crippled But Cute Artistry has been a long dream. Founder Juliana Gates. Juliana Gates has three chronic illnesses, but still lives every day dedicated to making her clients look and feel amazing. Juliana started building Crippled But Cute as a makeup artist in 2016. She dedicated her entire career to bringing out the inner beauty in all her clients. Makeup is more than just colors to Juliana. It's a chance for people to step out of their everyday comfort zone and discover the realm of phenomenal excellence in themselves. Impaired Artistry Institute offers a variety of services and proven technique for top of the art line of products. Impaired Artistry Institute is growing to be a gem of the Montgomery County with guaranteed quality and professionalism to all customers committing to making customers look stunning and feel their best. Let's welcome today's guest, Juliana Gates. So we'll bring you on in. So welcome, Juliana.
Hi.
I hope I didn't mess up your name too much.
Nah, it's all right. Look, you're fine.
So usually I get my last name mixed up or that sort of thing. So I want to say welcome to the show, the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast. So if you can please introduce yourself and give our audience a little bit about your background.
Of course. So my name is Juliana Yates. Everybody calls me Jules. I'm a celebrity makeup artist, hairstylist, and as well a creative director. And I have three chronic illnesses. I had a stroke in 2015, and I was in a wheelchair for almost 2 years. Wow. So makeup actually helped me regain my motor functions again. So I recognized that there were going to be people out there that probably needed a makeup artist that would understand their thought process, because it was definitely a difficult one for me to go through. I didn't want to feel the way that I looked. I didn't want to stay in that realm of, oh, this is just my life now. I wanted to try to figure it out so that I would be able to help others come out of their funk, per se. Mm-hmm. And now I'm super proud to say that I've created a community. I have my own little Crippled Cutie community. And Crippled But Cute is definitely a calling card. So I've been able to work with so many amazing ones with different ailments and illnesses, and really hone in on the beautiful aspects of the beauty industry through them. And so it's been an honor just to be a part of that within itself, because the beauty industry really doesn't have a space for us yet. And so creating a space for us, ones that are chronically ill, ones that have invisible illnesses, and ones that just, you know, are ridden with cancers and different other things that go on in everyday life, I'm happy to be a part of that beautiful innovation to beauty.
Exactly. And so many out there, I think once you have, the biggest thing is having an illness is one thing, or a lot of people too have an invisible illness. Because you can't see it, they don't know. And yourself with three different ones, like, you may look fine. And obviously, being a celebrity stylist, you have to be on set and you have to just go and do what you do, regardless of how you feel. You know what I mean? So, yes. So strength is probably, you know, I don't want to say it's more than, I'll say childbirth, but which I've never gone through or ever will. But it's something that with, and I think people don't like those labels, disabled or less than, or we're all people and it doesn't matter. It just happens to be, this is the path of some people's lives. Mm-hmm. they go on. And it's nice to have someone who created something for them who can bring out the best in them and bring out the empowerment in them or empower them, because there's so much and you're doing so much, which we're going to dive into later and more about Crippled But Cute, and also with what else you have going on and stuff like that. So we're going to kind of go back a little bit, and we're going to kind of go into your background. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey into the world of makeup artistry and kind of how you became a celebrity makeup artist? Like, what initially drew you to the world of makeup and beauty?
Rebellion. Look, I think that's the that's the big word.
Yes. Yeah.
Rebellion. I've always been a caretaker. So I've always helped my mother care for somebody, whether it be my father, my brother, or my grandmother, who passed a few years ago. But everybody swore up and down I was going to be a nurse. And I was,
not for you.
That is not my ministry. I have nothing but the utmost respect, love, and appreciation for all nurses everywhere. Yes. And I wanted to kind of take that nurturing aspect in a different direction. I'll never forget a good friend of mine, her mom ran a Fortune 500 company. And it was funny, my mom always used to tell me, you know, you don't need makeup, you know, makeup is low key for ugly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I can see that. I can understand that thought process at first. Mm-hmm. She didn't really have anything against it, but it was just the misconceptions of what makeup was. And so I'll never forget one of my best friend's mom, she was gorgeous and she wore a full face of makeup. And I was like, I'm going to see what she looks like up under there. That's right. And my mama said, look, my mama said.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so she came down. I was spending the night at my friend's house. She came down and she was even more beautiful without makeup.
Oh, wow.
Than she was with makeup.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wait a minute. No, we got to have a conversation. There's some things I just don't understand now. Like, we need to talk. And so she told me, she said, no, makeup is nothing but a woman's version of wearing a suit and tie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, clench the pearls. Wait a minute. This had me just intrigued. And she really gave me this outlook that I never had for makeup, which made me want to explore it even more. And so I was always like, less is more. Okay, I'm gonna do a little bit of brow here, a little bit of lip gloss here, a little bit of this there, a little bit nothing in a full face of a spectrum.
Yes.
And as I started to learn more about it, as I started to understand and dive down deep into color theory and lights and all, like the everything around makeup, not just makeup itself, understanding what are the different aspects, why would you need it, why do you need it for the camera, why do you need it for film, why do you need it, what are those things that pull you towards you need makeup, and those are the things I learned first.
Yes.
And so I dove down deep into the production side, and I learned everybody's job, grafting, lighting, because I wanted to understand how it all connected. And then I went ahead and went for my education through makeup and stuff like that. And so I was like, this makes so much more sense now. So much. Wow. It's a science. And once you understand and break down the science, it has little connecting pieces that go into it. And it was like something I had never experienced. And you constantly, my brain moves like squirrel. So, being able to keep evolving and keep moving in the industry was big for me. I did not need to do much anything else because makeup would always catch my attention and I would be able to manipulate it and do different things with it. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, the nice thing is you did your research first, because I think a lot of makeup artists or to be makeup artists, they think, oh, I've done my own makeup for years, I can do anybody else, which, you know, there's different, you know, as I say, there is a big difference between stage makeup, wedded bridal makeup, you know, every day if you're going on the town, natural makeup, men's makeup, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Me, for myself, I started as a makeup artist before I became a hairstylist. So I did you know, actors, I did models, I did all that kind of stuff. But the same, you have to, with kind of marrying those two together, you really learn about different lighting, different, and it's the same with almost, same with hair as well. You can have a color done, but because of the lighting, it can make it look warmer, it can make it look cooler, it can make it look darker, it can make it look, you know, a blonde could look orange and brassy in certain lights, and, you know, like, but it works the same with the skin. And myself doing, you know, for stage, you see what kind of lights are being projected to the stage. Are they warm? Are they cool? What kind of gels are you using? I find it interesting that you, as I say, went to your friend's house and she looked better without it, better without makeup, because most times makeup is there to enhance. But there's also schools of thought, don't wear makeup, that's a sin. You know, yes. It's there's all these things that get kind of projected. I think, and it's I have a friend who did a movie called Beyond Vanity, and one person that was talking in there, they said the beauty industry, how they get people, this might push some buttons, but it says in order to get you to buy their product, they tell you you're ugly.
Yes.
So by telling you you're ugly, if you buy our this or that or whatever, you're going to be like the cool people. And mm-hmm. obviously you're in the world with celebrities, you're in the world with, so could you share some of your most memorable experience with celebrities?
I think the most funniest one I love, because it was really funny. Mm-hmm. We worked with a male artist, mm-hmm. and it was funny because the photographer, we were shooting for a cover of a magazine.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. they knew I was really big on male grooming because I have like 8 brothers. And so I was like, no, you cannot mess this up. Mm-hmm. And so the photographer and the editor-in-chief of the magazine told me, hey, we just need you to come in and do touch-ups. You know, it's going to be a full day. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, cool, no problem. Now, mind you, as a full-time makeup artist, we have the bag mm-hmm. that has everything in it.
Yes.
And then we have the touch-up kit. Mm-hmm. Touch-up kit is very cute, small, compact. It's pretty cute. And I lied to you not, when I got there and they were like, oh, that's all you brought? I was like, wait, was I supposed to break? Wait. So am I doing full things? And they were like, yeah. Oh, okay. So I've learned in my years of doing this to have some, you know, some tricks inside of the touch-up kit. So I always carry a powder foundation. I always carry, you know, things for brows, things mm-hmm. for, you know, facial hair, all of that. Mm-hmm. My, you know, the base, but not like everything. Mm-hmm. So I went and I DoorDashed the foundation, the concealer. When I tell you, I DoorDashed everything, snuck out while he was getting dressed. Because I was mm-hmm. like, oh, I got to see underneath the lights, you know, if I need to take him up or take him down. I was buying myself some time. Mm-hmm. and they laughed uncontrollably afterwards because I took him to the side and I was like, hey, I need the full kit. Yeah. So I need you to tell me what it is that I need to do from here on mm-hmm. out, because I'm not like a regular makeup artist. I know why you said what you said.
Yes.
Because most makeup artists, they think, oh, they need makeup, which mm-hmm. is a full face of makeup. And men's grooming makeup is completely different. Mm-hmm. And so being able to teach somebody who works with celebrities on a day-to-day like area, being able to just inform them, hey, you do realize I DoorDashed everything within like a 10-minute period, right? Mm-hmm. And I got there and I did everything. And the male artist absolutely loved me. And I was like, oh, because I played it off cool, calm, and collected. Mm-hmm. But inside, I was like, oh my God.
Breaking out.
But it was absolutely hilarious because after the fact, you know, they winded up using those pictures for their cover art.
Oh, wow.
So now I am on Amazon Prime. My work is on Amazon Prime. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple Music. So it was a joy to see. Mm-hmm. And so we're one of the ones that they work with from time to time with the full team. They like the magazine actually hired me after that.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So that was for me, that was extremely memorable because of the misconceptions, but also the teaching factor, but also it was just funny. It was, you got to learn.
And the same, I guess. I mean, we always have to be prepared, but obviously I fully understand when somebody says touch up, you think I'm going to bring enough to touch up. That's it. Why bring more if I don't need it? And you're lugging all your stuff and you've got your roll cart and you've got your bags and you've got
four bags, not including a light.
So at least now you got a whole new set of makeup.
That's very much so.
Out of that sort of thing. But do you have any like standout moments or projects that you did that kind of ring true just kind of in your life? Something that really kind of hits home for you?
Yes. She's a celebrity to me. I'll put it like that, because this particular experience, I'll always remember. And it was a daughter who reached out to me. Her mom was in an accident and became a quadriplegic, and she was getting married. And so she asked me if I felt comfortable doing makeup for her mom, even though she was in a hospital bed. I said, absolutely. I said, that's not a problem whatsoever. And she was like, are you sure? I said, no, I'm absolutely positive. And, you know, if there are things that need to happen. So I winded up clearing my whole day because I wanted to give them the proper time, understand that there were different variables that might come up. So I wanted to be prepared. And so her mom, she said her mom really didn't smile as much. And so I was doing her makeup and I sat in the bed next to her as I did her makeup because I wanted her to be comfortable. And they were like, oh, do you want me? I said, nope, it's not about me. I said, it's about her. If she's comfortable, I will maneuver myself to make sure that I can do anything and everything that needs to be provided. My biggest thing is making sure that she stays comfortable and the experience is memorable for her.
Yeah.
And so they were, and I was like, no, that's how it should be. And so I did her mother's makeup and we did a whole reveal and everything. And the daughter started to cry because she had never seen her mother smile like that in years. And then I went ahead and did, of course, the bride and everything. And so the pictures and everything were amazing. And she passed away 2 days after she got married. Aww. And she was just like, I will never forget you because you gave me back a memory that I never thought I would get. And that was the smile of my mom from when I was little. And I like lost it, broke down.
I'm breaking down.
I was like, oh my gosh. But that goes to show you that there are ones where people think that's going to be too hard. And they forget about the ones that have also lost their sense of femininity, their sense of womanhood. And they just want a piece of that. So being able to give her just a little bit of that back to where she could see herself, not only as a mother, but as a woman. That is what makes me do what I do every day. I am just in awe of everything that I've done and put forth since then, because it's just experience after experience. And I truly love what I do.
And I think that's it. Like artists in the industry, they don't really know their power as far as what kind of changes they can make, what kind of impact they can make on others just by reaching out. And I think some people, not in a negative light, but I think some people are afraid to do people that are different, even though they're not different. Believe me, people are just people and that's just the way it is.
But
some people are different than them, you know what I mean? So, or had an accident or had things like that, or they know they're around death, or they know they're around, you know, like that kind of stuff. It's like, this is a whole, I mean, we may have to do a series, but this is a whole thing to unpack. And I've got still so much to talk about, but so how do you approach the challenge of creating different looks for a variety of events and media platforms?
Ooh, I have a thing. When I look at beauty, beauty doesn't always mean lustful. Beauty can be painful. Beauty can be distressed. Beauty can be so many different things. And it requires a different eye. It requires a level of creativity that a lot of people are afraid of. There are things that I've attempted to do that just didn't pan out. And I'm just like, it was in my head. I don't know. We'll go back and revisit. Exactly. But
Yeah, you got to do it. Well, at least if you try it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And there were other things that just, it took off and it just became something that was like, whoa, oh, wow. Oh, that was beautiful and exciting. And, you know, I'm one, if I can glue it to your face without you breaking out and understanding what your chemical breakdown is, I'm probably going to try it at least once.
Get that spirit gum.
Let's see what happens. Let's check you to make sure we're all right. We're okay.
Yeah.
But I love bald heads. My hair is starting to grow back in, but I love being able to try different things with bald heads because so many women feel that their beauty is in their hair, especially women of color. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'll do some wild and outrageous things with bald heads just to show the beauty in a bald head. Let's bedazzle it. Let's throw an applique on it and do amazing, weird, cool, innovative, beautiful things with it. And it's been published multiple times.
Oh,
and wow. It's been cool because you start to see the trends. You start to see, oh, somebody saw what I did. Oh, that's cool. You know, and so I don't mind that. And just teardrops and just different painful agony type things that people don't stop to think that, yo, that's really pretty. But I feel other things along with that. And that is my ultimate concept. I want you to be like, wow, that's amazing. But I also want you to feel other emotions. Let's get a talking point. Let's have these grown-up conversations. And that's how I like to approach my content for media platforms and stuff like that. Sometimes people want to make a statement for actual events. I'm all for it. I just want to make sure that it's done in an elegant way. So it's about finding that balance for me.
Oh, yeah. It's nice. And you must collaborate with a lot of people. So collaborating with different artists and personalities must be exciting. Can you share how you adapt to your creative process to suit the individual you're working with?
Ooh, I think I'm okay. One of my favorite people to collaborate with, I'm going to say her name because she's amazing, is Monet Everett. When I tell you.
I love her. And we're going to shout out Monet, Texture Style Awards.
Yes, it was amazing.
Shameless plug.
I know, right? I was like, please, if I'm telling you, you got to go and do it next year.
Yep.
But she pushes me to be better. She pushes me to stay out of a level of mediocrity. And that right there, it stings at first.
People don't like hard, don't like challenge, don't like change.
Exactly.
They love them, their comfort zone.
I think sometimes when you're in, sometimes in your area, there might just be a level that everybody's just relaxed on. And sometimes it's comfortable.
Yes.
And one, she had me in tears when we went to the IBS awards in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And she was on a panel and she said, I'm that friend that's going to ask you, oh, so you comfortable? Why? Mm-hmm. Oh, so you didn't go ask the person why you are not in the magazine or on the billboard? Oh, so we're going to be comfortable. Dagger to my soul. I'm comfortable. Like it was.
Oh, yeah. No, she doesn't. She doesn't hold back at all.
I love it. I absolutely love it because I recognize that, you know what? I'm too comfortable. And I had to learn a level of humility in a way that allowed others to help me to see that I was in a level of mediocrity and pull myself out of that. And so I love it. It's about listening. I have to listen and understand what it is that you expect from me, what it is that you're trying to get me to see and understand.
Yes.
Because the level of communication is different sometimes. So you really have to ask those questions. You really have to really ask the questions to understand what a person is trying to get you to understand. And that right there is hard. It's difficult. But if you listen to understand instead of just listening to reply, you're whatever industry you're in, you're going to automatically level up because everybody's going to want to work with you because you bring a level of, you're a team player, but you're also, you bring your level of expertise and then it meshes like a puzzle piece.
Yes.
And it's super fun after that because you're just like, I see what you see now. and you see what I see now.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And then you just excited.
Mm-hmm. Because you're creating, yeah, something amazing. So talking of challenges, like what are some of the most unique or challenging makeup looks you've been asked to create? And how did you bring those visions to life? I know we got all the tough ones.
Oh, this is a good question.
I've been around Monet too long, so I'm.
I know. I'm getting in there.
We're going deep. Look. We're gonna.
Okay. Let's see. Being left to my own devices really is probably the hardest thing because I have a range of very, very light to very in depth. So when people say, "Do what you want," no. Give me direction.
Exactly. Yeah.
Point me in a direction you would like me to flow into. Mm-hmm. I think the hardest one was it was for a client who was doing a magazine shoot and she had a bald head. She didn't want any hair. Oh. And she wanted to do something with her bald head. Didn't know what she wanted to do with it, but she also had her clothes, the garments were African inspired. So they were all the way, I think they were from Ghana. And so it was mixed prints. Everything was, it was a lot of color, a lot of color. And I was trying to figure out how to marry whatever she was doing because she had body art. And I was like, I don't want it to be a jumbled mess. So I need to hone in and probably do one color, but what color, what do I see? So it was a lot of talking to the body artist. What was she going to do? It was a lot of, hey, what do you like inside of this garment? What are some of your favorite focal points inside of this garment that we're going to shoot? And so she gave me a list and I was like, okay.
Yeah. <laughs> Yes, got a direction.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to create a 3D aspect on her head.
Wow.
So what I did was I found, I have, my mom is a designer, so she has all of these appliques lying around her house. So I go and I'm like, hey, do you need that? Hey, do you need that? And she goes, just take it. And so I have like this humongous box of just stuff. My kids call it the Barney bag of stuff.
Yes.
So I was able to create this lace applique around her head that beautifully adorned the garment that she was wearing, that beautifully adorned the body art that went with it. And it was just epic. It was such a moment. And I was like, wow. It's like you don't really expect it to look like it does in your head. And I was like, that was surprising to me. And I just like, you guys, thanks. I appreciate the push and the pull. I appreciate the level of creativity that I was like, if you got, I don't, okay.
Oh, yeah. Because I even know for myself, I love that when I'm working backstage, I love the pressure of not having any time. Because for me, it doesn't allow me to think. I work well. I work well that way because when you don't have time to, because you overanalyze sometimes.
Yes.
So if you just got to get them done and get them out, you just got to do what you need to do. And I find for me, that's so much better. Obviously, everything is pre-planned ahead of time. You've talked to the directors, the producers, the people, the, you know what I mean? And I'm usually the head of. So basically, you have everything already done, but sometimes too, if they want a quick change, they want something, you know, you do that on photo shoots, you do that on runway, you do that on sometimes on stage or something happens, sort of thing. And, you know, trends are always changing and that sort of thing. So we're going to talk a little bit about, so makeup trends can change rapidly. How do you stay current and find inspiration in an ever-evolving industry?
So I look at a lot of, I watch the Met Gala every year for one.
Yes.
But I always love to look up the up-and-coming themes.
Okay.
I look at the different color trends that are on track for every season. I pay attention, you know, TikTok trends.
Yep.
Interesting. Fun. I like to take those and put them into more of a genre that can be used for more commercial or editorial spaces. And sometimes it's just about finding an old trend from back in the day and figure out how you can modernize it, bring it into the now. And one of my mentors, she's been in the game for years. And she told me, she said, you need generational tips and tricks because trends come and go, but the generational ideas remain forever. So as long as you understand the core generational tips and tricks and techniques, you can always pull from any genre, any decade, and figure out how to modernize it now. And I've taken that to heart because she's absolutely right. And so for me, a lot of people, they do it with fashion all the time. Everything is pulled from the, you know, the 60s, the 70s, and brought into a space of where we are now in 2023. So you can do the exact same thing with makeup. And that's how I tend to move forward now.
Yeah. And hair works the same way, because it's the same with the hair industry as well. They take things from the past, come reinvent them, but you always have your foundational basics, which is your blunt lines, your long layered lines, and then your uniform lines. Yeah. So then from there, you create all kinds of, because now we have many more products, many more tools, many more things than we used to. You know what I mean? And it, 'cause now stuff is a lot more sheer. And even with makeup, like, people aren't wearing a pound of pancake. I mean, it's different if you're in a soap opera studio and you're under tons of lights and things like that. But to go out in the day, you're not going to need all that kind of stuff. I understand for some people that want to cover where it's more like medical makeup, covering scars, covering tattoos, covering, you need something that'll give you a little bit more,
a little bit more coverage.
But talking about a little bit about techniques, could you share a few makeup techniques that you find essential for achieving a flawless and a long-lasting look?
Ooh, one of my favorite for oily skin. I have one for oily skin and one for dry, because my clients, they're always like, whose face is this? For my oily skin, I use I love Benefit. Benefit has a primer that is great for oily skin, but I love to do the moisturizer. And it's a moisturizer called, it's a Calendula face moisturizer. And it's from Turkey. I absolutely love this product because it's great for oily skin as well as dry as well. And the way that it just sucks up. It sucks up everything. It
goes right in. There's not a layer on your
skin. No, it's hydrating. And then, you know, after that, I do a layer of powder, the nice, finely milled translucent powder, and then my Benefit primer that goes over that. And then sometimes I might even do a nice little light dusting again of the very fine translucent powder. And then just kind of let everything meld within each other. But for my dry skin, I always add a serum. And that serum, you got to do the serum, then the moisturizer. Because it's going to lock in all of that moisture, but it's going to make the skin so supple. And I always make sure I leave them with some of my favorite, because there's a company that I work with. They give me a whole bunch of samples. And so I'm able to put little cute little kits together for them that I think will work better for their skin. And I love, it's also a Turkish brand. The one that I use is called, it's an Aqua line. It's got niacinamide. It's got hydrolonic acid.
Which is great for moisture.
For moisture. And it just, it's not sticky. It's not, it's just, it's gold. Nice.
It just goes on and
it just goes on just as pretty. And it's just makes them all glowy. And they're like, whose face is this? It's yours, honey. Just yours.
But I think that's a big thing with a lot of people. They have so many products, even people that work in the industry, they have so many products, but they kind of don't know which order they should go in and what I should use. And, you know, I'm going to put some hydrolonic acid on, and I'm going to put this on, and I'm going to use kojic acid. I'm going to, I mean, all these things, I'm going to use like a fruit acid for peeling. But you have to really know your skin
Yes.
Because people think if a little bit is good, more is better, which is not always the truth.
You're so right. Yeah. You are so right.
Hopefully she's not listening, but she likes to peel a little too much. So because they like the look of it when your skin is exfoliated, rapidly exfoliated, but doing that all the time is going to make you photosensitive.
Exactly.
It's going to do a lot of things that, you know, you shouldn't do. But we're going to kind of jump on. This has been so fascinating already. So if everybody's listening, we're with Juliana Yates. She's a celebrity makeup artist, creative director. We're going to talk more about Crippled But Cute and all your other fun stuff coming up. But I want to make sure I get everything in that I want to know. But I'm sure that our audience kind of know as well. But let's talk a little bit about behind the scenes. So many people are fascinated with the behind the scenes aspects of celebrity makeup. So, and a celebrity could be anyone, right? So that sort of thing. So can you describe a typical day on set or before a red carpet or like an event? So what's your typical day? When do you start? How do you pack? What do you do?
So typically those are early days.
Do you eat? Do you drink? Do you crash when you get home?
I might snack most of the time. It's we call Starbucks. Me and my team, we call Starbucks fun in a cup. So we're just like, we got to get that fun in a cup before we start our day. And typically my day starts anywhere, depends on where I'm going. If I'm in New York, my day typically starts at 2 a.m. in the morning. And because I am on a bus to New York so that I can be where I got to be by 6 in the morning. And if not earlier. So sometimes I might be, my day might start at midnight so that I can be there by 4 o'clock in the morning. It just kind of depends on what's happening for that. And that means you are going to have to be mindful of the things that you pack. Mm-hmm. When I do travel, I have larger kits.
Yes.
It sounds weird, but I have all of my foundations. They're just moved from larger regular size containers to the smaller travel size containers because you have to be mindful that you can't fly with certain amounts of, you know, fluid ounces and stuff like that. So you have to be mindful of where you're going and what are the rules for TSA.
Yes.
And TSA, they saw how I packed everything and they were like, oh, wow. They opened it and then put it back and closed it because they were just like, you did such a good job.
Oh, yeah. That's good. They didn't take everything out.
I'd cry. I would have shed real tears. And then making sure that I arrive with a very calm atmosphere. That's me. I create a very calm, relaxing atmosphere. And because you're already stressed. Mm-hmm. So I got to get you to relax because you tense your face up and then things get, you know, a little special.
Extra
Exactly. I'm like, let's relax muscles. It's a great thing. And then we get into, hey, how do you want to be perceived in a room? That's a different question that I ask because it's a different thing how you want to look. Mm-hmm. And versus how you want to be perceived in a room.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so that gives me my color combinations. I'm talking with the stylist. Hey, what is she wearing? What is, you know, what are her shoes? What are her accessories? Are we doing gold? Are we doing platinum? Are we doing silver? Are we doing rose gold? Because that will determine what her highlight is. If, you know, that will determine a multitude of things that happen.
Yes.
Going forward. Mm-hmm. And it's understanding, I'm very precise with my order of operation. So where I start, some people start with the foundation first. Mm-hmm. And for me, it just depends. It just depends on if their eyes are very dramatic. Mm-hmm. I might start with those first. If we're doing something very, you know, low key, something very soft and pretty, I can start with foundation first. I can start with the base first. Another good way is understanding if you have an eyeshadow palette that has a lot more residual fallout. Mm. I might then resort to doing the eyes first so that I don't mess up my base.
Yes.
Or if I'm doing an eyeshadow that is cream to powder that has no fallout, then I can do base first. So it's one of those things. There are a lot of deciding factors. Yes.
Yeah.
And not everybody, right now, everybody's into the dewy, glowy skin for red carpet events. And it is super easy to do if you understand the order of operations. Yes. And you can do it a few different ways even. I know one of my favorite products. Is Danessa Myricks has a what is it? It is like an illuminator. There we go.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you can 2 drops inside of the foundation, and it just glowy air spot.
So allows the light to reflect on. Yeah.
It makes my heart flutter just a little bit.
Just going there, taking that mental journey.
You know, there's been times where it's just like, I'm only going to use a little bit. Okay, maybe 4 pumps.
A little bit. They need a little extra.
And it's fun. And they are, because it goes back into how they want to be perceived and how they want to feel when they finish, when I finish. Exactly. Those two things are the most important things to me. And I really pay attention to their body language and what they say versus what they don't say, because that gives me where I need to go. That gives me the color choices I need. And I hear a lot in my industry that, well, that's not what she said.
Yes.
Yep. They're not in the industry, so they're going to mess up the different terminology. It's my job to decipher before anything happens.
Yeah, to know to explain. Yeah, so they're giving you some terms, and that's not right. That, I mean, that kind of works in the hair industry as well. So what are some of the key factors you consider when selecting products for a specific?
Some of the key products. Well, I ask a lot of questions about their skincare routine, because their skincare routine might be counterproductive with my makeup products. So it's always good to have a variety of companies and brands in your kit that either is oil-based, water-based, you know, silicone-based, so that you're prepared in any situation. I pay attention to a lot of the different brands. Some companies are more or less like a skin tint. Other companies are more of a full coverage. And I have to pay attention to how my client feels in regards to makeup, because you can't put a client that is not a fan of makeup but does it because of whatever profession they're in. I can't put them in a full regalia beat of makeup, because then I lose the chance of them booking with me again, because they just told me that they're not a big fan of makeup, but they do it because they have these events to go to. That proves that I wasn't listening. So that I'm very, very conscious of the different brands for each client that sits in my chair. So if they're, that'll tell me what foundation to pull. That'll tell me what primer to use. That'll tell me what powder to use. And so I hope that answered your question.
Oh yeah. No, it's great that you also mentioned, you mentioned like skincare, because that's one part. So makeup often starts with skincare. So could you outline the importance of skincare in achieving a polished look, like especially for events that require longevity? So say they've got a thing and they've got to go for hours and that sort of thing, because I think a lot of makeup artists don't consider skincare. But skincare is kind of your prep before you put your primer, your makeup, like doing all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And like you said, it can interact. What have they got on there? They put some slippery, oily kind of
oil.
Well, yeah, that or moisturizer, like something like that. And you're going to slap foundation over top. So do you prep them and work on a clean base, or do you... Or do you have them come in and, like you said, kind of ask them, you know, have they used anything on their skin?
And so I have clients that are very skincare conscious. And then I have others that are just like, I used soap this morning. It just kind of depends.
Yeah, exactly.
So that will tell me how in depth their skin prep is going to be. And for the ones that are more of a skin prep conscious client, I'm asking, hey, do you, most of the time, I know the type of brands that they're using if they are really skincare conscious. They can tell me, oh, I use this, I use that. And so that, because I've been doing this for a very long time, I can tell you, okay, I need to pull this, because if I use this, it's going to interact with that and then it's going to separate.
Yes.
So it's very, my skin prep for all of my clients is very different.
Okay.
And so I pay attention. I see if you're acne prone. I see if your skin is more dry. Some people are like, hey, my skin is completely dry. And I ask, hey, do you mind if I feel your skin? And because I just don't want to go touching people, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Personal space,
exactly. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So respecting everybody's personal space to just kind of say, hey, so then I can feel if it's tight. That is an indication that they have dry skin. If you see, you know, that it's, you can see the tightness on the top epidermoid skin layer. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, it's dry skin. Or if I'm feeling their skin and I'm pulling back residue, that gives me an indication that they have oily skin. If I'm feeling their skin and it's pretty supple, you know, there's not too oily, it's not too, that tells me it's a really great combination or just normal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So then I can automatically, okay, I have a normal skincare routine. I have an oily skincare routine, I have a dry skincare routine, and I have a combination skincare routine. Yes. And so understanding my order of operations starts with understanding what needs to happen first with their mm-hmm. skin, because that's what's going to create a more radiant
yes.
makeup application. Mm-hmm. So,
but yeah. Especially if you're in front of cameras, and especially now with the 4K cameras and the everything, and like 4K. Like if your pores are like, you know what I mean? We're not going to go there now, but I'm sure there's a lot of kind of aspiring artists that are watching. So for those that are going to enter the makeup industry, what advice would you offer to help them develop their skills and make a name for them?
Ooh, okay. For one, there's three. I'm gonna go for my top three.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The first one being be humble, because there are going to be other artists that are better than you, and that's okay. You want to be able to be embraced into the community, because we're a community. I've mm-hmm. met amazing makeup artists.
Yes.
And when you come in with a very humble and enjoyable spirit, they remember you, and mm-hmm. there are going to be jobs that they might not be able to take that they'll pass on to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So number one would definitely be humble. And number two would be study. Mm. Study your industry. Figure out what you want to do. Understand the breakdowns. Understand color theory. Understand the different facets of makeup.
Yes.
And because then you'll be able to intertwine them, and that'll make you a better makeup artist. If you just want to be a bridal makeup artist, study commercial, study TV and film, because you'll understand what a better natural base looks like for the brides that are not comfortable with makeup. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to make you a better bridal makeup artist, understanding those two aspects alone. Mm-hmm. And the third one would be find a mentor that is in the area that you want to be in, and or find two or three.
Yes.
Because one might be better in this area, another one might be better in another, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that way you are an all around, well-rounded makeup artist. Mm-hmm. And don't just stick to the high-end brands. There are some brands out there that are truly in competition with bigger brands that do just about, if not a better job. Mm-hmm. So don't get stuck on, I have to be high end. You do not have to be high end.
Mm-hmm. No, and you still have to get in there. You still have to kind of pay your dues and things like that. Were there any challenges that you faced during your journey that you believe others could learn from?
Yes. There are going to be times where you're going to need to take no money mm-hmm. because there are people that are going to want to see that it's more about the experience for you. And it's not the fact that they don't always have the money.
No. Yeah. But I think, but when you're first starting too, you got to get out there and then, like I said, pay your dues. And you can't just take a program, finish your program, get your certificate, and all of a sudden I don't get out of bed unless I make $10,000.
Exactly.
Lose that mentality, because you're going to be lying in bed a long time.
You're going to be asleep forever, and you might be asleep on a corner the way that mentality is working. But you got to be willing to do the effort, to have the effort to take no money. It's an effort. Okay. For me, that was a challenge because, you know, my husband didn't understand why I took jobs without being paid in the very beginning. But I was in rooms with millionaires.
Exactly.
And now I get paid from the millionaires that let me sit there for free.
Exactly.
And that is where you want to be. And don't be caught up on a name. Don't get caught up on, I'm going to be a celebrity. A lot of people don't even know I'm a celebrity makeup artist. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yep.
The ones that know, know. And the mm-hmm. ones that understand I'm worth it, are those are the ones I work with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. And they'll find you.
They will.
They'll find you. So this is kind of a fun thing to get into. So do you have like go-to makeup products you find yourself reaching for consistently? What are things that you love? What are the hidden gems you want to share? You know, and do you have a balance of like high-end products and more accessible makeup products?
I do.
So this is your fun time to get your mind going and say, I love this. I got to grab that. We already know some of them, the turkey one.
Yes. My turkey skincare products are probably hands down my all-time favorite because they have something for all of my clients.
Yes.
And they're actually, the name of them is called Pharmacy.
I know them.
With Dr. Tuna. Let me tell you, I could rave about them all day.
Yeah.
I love them, and I'm always like, you guys, I have you. It's fine. The next thing for me, TV and film, Danessa Myrick's Yummy Skin and Blurring Balm will probably hands down my favorite product, because 4K will mess you up if you don't know what you're doing.
Well, and to get rid of the shine, the blur, I mean, to get rid of the shine, to soften the lines, to look a little bit younger when you're in industry, when you're, you know, everything's in your face.
It is.
And you're judged.
So you know? Judged. Yeah. And then I love, ooh, this is hard. Ooh.
There's so many.
So many good ones. And I'm thinking about what's in my kit right now. I actually just found this new company because I have a thing for metallic lip colors. Mm-hmm. And they're called Pretty Vulgar.
Oh. Okay.
Their lip color. As a Black woman, it's very difficult to find a good metallic shade when you want to go and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fun. Mm-hmm. So I love the MAC powders. They have a brightening powder. They have translucent powder. Love those. The Crinoline setting spray, all-time favorite setting spray. People don't know it's literally like hairspray in a bottle, but it's it'll stay. Look.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's kind of right now, that's kind of the big controversy of America right now. You can put Got to Be Glue on your face, don't you?
Oh, yeah. That was funny because digressing a little bit, Monet had posted something and she said, how do you get your client's hair to stay for long periods of time for longevity? And I said, Gorilla Glue.
I remember.
So, but like, people do not use Gorilla Glue,
please,
on your face or on your hair.
Please, I would appreciate it.
That's our PSA for
that's beyond PSA. That's the biggest warning anybody can give you.
I love people are excited about the products they use and things like that. But one thing you said is sometimes you work for free, but you're in rooms with millionaires. So the basically building rapport with clients, especially celebrities, must be crucial. So how do you establish trust and understand their preferences while infusing your own artistic touch?
Well, before you even get to the celebrity, you got to get through the publicist and you got to get through the production company that also works with them as well. So once you can show professionalism, once you can show that you can move as a team, sometimes it might be holding a reflector. Sometimes it might just be being there so that in case they need somebody to move and adjust hair or adjust the lapel, you've shown that you're willing to be there for the success of a project. Mm. That is probably my biggest thing that I learned, is understand you have to be for the success of the project. Mm-hmm. And that comes in many forms. So as a makeup artist who also does creative directing, who also does editorial hair, I am always going to be for the success of a project. Mm-hmm. So whatever you need, I'm willing to do. You need me to go grab lunch because they are not offering delivery, Let's get it to you. I will go and go get it, bring it back, because I'm done with everybody. But you have me all day. So utilize me.
Exactly. And you're being paid, but a lot of the big words now, or I need to be paid what I'm worth, charge what you're worth. And that's not my job. Mm-hmm. So I'm the makeup artist. That's not my job to get your lunch. That's my job to do this. Obviously, if it is a collaborative and it is a project, and I think people really see, if you're willing to go that extra mile, like, you have to think the role reversed. If you're on a project, you want somebody saying, if you're desperate and you're behind, like, and you need something, somebody says, no, sorry, that's not my job. And they kind of leave you, which kind of leads us into kind of the future of the makeup artistry. So as an industry continues to evolve, what do you foresee as future trends or innovations in the makeup artists?
One of the big things that I can really see now is they're coming back into an era of the Grace Jones blush era.
Oh, yeah, that hard.
Yes.
Yeah,
right. I'm indifferent.
Yeah.
I feel it has its place.
But not for everyone.
Yes. I don't hate it, because I feel it can be very editorial. I feel it can be very, very beautifully done. Mm-hmm. But it just can't be done all willy-nilly for everybody.
Exactly. And Grace, I mean, she has incredible bone structure.
Exactly.
She has stature. She has presence. She has, she's empowered. So when you see her, you see a strong woman.
Yes.
You don't see a mouse, you know?
Exactly. And so I also see, I am hoping that the era of the quadruple overlined lips will be gone. I'm hopeful.
Yeah,
I'm hopeful.
It speaks for
itself. I can also see the different liners coming back, the different liner techniques coming back, and it just being simple, all about the line. I'm excited to see more of regal skin, not clean skin.
Yes.
It's that, what I like to call it is that new money skin, because it's ethereal. It's not too glowy, but it's not too matte. It's just, you're just, it's just like you're glowing.
Yeah, like luminescent kind of.
Luminescent. There we go. That's the word I was looking for.
Like a tinted moisturizer, like a sheer or a sheer, you know, water foundation or something, just kind of, so you can see your natural that comes through, whether you have freckles, whether you have that, it can naturally glow and you can embrace who you are. But are there any aspects of the makeup industry you're particularly excited about exploring in the coming years?
I would love to see more of people marrying avant-garde with more beauty campaigns. Instead of it being super clean, I would love for them to be able to do some very intentional pairings. So it's just like, her skin is so beautiful, but her eyes are amazing. Oh my gosh, are those spikes for eyebrows? Like, I want it to be really hard and soft, where they're not clashing, but they're tugging at each other.
Exactly. And it's kind of nice for the artist too, to be able to be more creative, more out there, more, you know, because it's not your, you know, typical polished model on a magazine type thing. It's something that's a little bit more kind of out there. I've been enjoying our time so much. So we're obviously too, if you're tuning in, we have Juliana Gates. So Impaired Artistry Institute and Crippled But Cute. And that's what we're going to dive into now. So I want you to kind of say, how did this come about? Like, just tell us everything, what you're doing, what's happening, what's going on. So Impaired Artistry, I know you mentioned a little bit at the beginning, and you kind of have a space, and you have some, like, so you have very exciting news. So whatever tea you want to spill,
you know, where my cup at? Look,
feel free.
So we actually just, me and my partner, Terrell, he's the editor-in-chief of Revo Magazine. And so I've been working with them for a little over 2 years now. And we just opened the House of Revo. It is a PR showroom in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yay.
And so it is an amazing space And I love it because a lot of people don't really understand what a PR showroom is. Mm-hmm. And so being able to understand that a PR showroom is for a designer's marketing. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the different showrooms that are out in New York and LA and Atlanta, you're only paying for a space.
Yes.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And you're only paying for the space so that your garments will be pulled for the Oscars, for BET, yeah, for, you know, whatever other red carpet event that's happening, you know, for the season.
Yes.
You're not getting paid for that. The designers are not getting paid for that.
Yes.
And we at the House of Revo wanted our designers to be paid for stuff like that.
Yes.
So people can come in and rent these garments for these different events.
Wow. Yeah.
And they get to collect 100% of their rental fees.
Oh, perfect.
And yeah, so they're collecting income for that. But also we're providing them a lookbook. We're providing media content. We are shuffling them to all the different production houses and companies that we are physically intertwined with. And the different celebrity stylists that we have that work with us as well. And so there are different magazines that come and shoot at our showroom. There are different celebrities that we are, you know, dressing for different covers and different media outlets and so on and so forth, for the news, for different TV segments and so on and so forth. So being able to put your garments in our showroom is different because you're getting all of your marketing. We're doing it for you. It's a very hands-off type of atmosphere. And you just say, I want my money here. And we go, okay, we'll put your money there. When the money comes in, we'll put your money there. So we are very, we understand fashion. We understand the editorial aspect. We understand the very commercial aspect. Mm-hmm. So why not allow us to be able to take it and you can rest because designers work hard.
Well, and that's a tough thing. I think for most people, artists, any kind of collaborative, anything, is finding the team of people and then getting everybody in one space and getting everybody scheduled aligned and all that kind of stuff as well. And if they have a place where they can go, go in, have a conversation with you saying, this is what we need, this is what we're looking for. You're able to connect with them and offer, you know, obviously solutions. And you've been in the industry, so you know, you're not just somebody who woke up and thought, I'm going to have a space. Everybody come, build it, they'll come. You have the skills, you have the technique, you have the, and I'm so, and I've already checked this out. So, you know what I mean? The obviously I have to dig, I have to do my research. I have to, you know, that's one thing we have in common. You know, we're kind of, but as I say, everybody should go and check out Revo Magazine. And we'll post your other links a little bit later. But kind of as we're wrapping up, I don't want to, but we have to wrap up. And but is there any kind of questions that I know we've been talking for the last while that I haven't asked you that you kind of want to express? Or that you want our audience to know?
I think the biggest thing is I also host a men in makeup class, because that right there is something that is completely unheard of.
Exactly.
in our industry, because I love doing editorial with men, because it can be something so amazing because of the masculinity mixed with what I do that can quote unquote be called feminine. And so finding that nice median, I shall put it that way.
Exactly. Yeah.
To put that into a photograph is something that can be amazing. And I'm really known for my male grooming because I don't do a lot. I do enough. And that will always be how I decide to do my male grooming. I do just enough. Because there are going to be guys that are accustomed to a full face of makeup, but then there are other guys that are like, I don't want that.
More natural. I don't like the feel of anything on my face.
Exactly. And so then I help them go straight into their skincare routine. My men in makeup class, they get a whole kit. They get a whole entire kit so that when they go into Ulta, I need a re-up on this. I don't know what this is. I need this.
Exactly.
I have brothers. I completely understand. My brothers, I'm out of this And I just...
You get it for them.
It's just straight to their house.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's easier. And they have everything they need so that they can feel empowered, whether yes. they're doing a fashion show, whether they're doing a photo shoot. So understanding what their skin needs and mm-hmm. how to get their skin to do whatever the job is entailing for yes. that day, in case mm-hmm. the makeup artist isn't familiar with male yeah. grooming.
Of course. And I think it's not just models, male models or actors.
No, no.
I think it's also everyday men that maybe are a podcast host.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not wearing any, but you know, it could be enhanced, obviously, mm-hmm. because too, you could look, because of lighting, same, may you look pale, like
absolutely.
Do that kind of stuff.
Even bloggers.
For business, even anybody who's just getting a headshot, anybody
oh, yeah.
who's like, just like your business profile, your LinkedIn profile, like just things like that, just to, or all of a sudden you do it and you've got a big zit that breaks out just on the day that, so most guys don't know about concealer. Most
yep.
guys don't know about a skincare regimen. Most, like I say, they wash their face with soap. Even with grooming, like even shaping your facial hair, for even some actors, there are certain ways of slimming down the face. There are certain ways of, you know, you're not going to do tons of contouring with makeup and that, depending on what you're doing.
Yep.
I used to on stage for character stuff, if you're making where you have to modify your face sort
yep.
of thing. But I don't think it's that thing now where it's, I'll say taboo, but you can kind of, like, now it's okay. Like, you
yeah.
don't have to, like, I think now having that, it's just part of a skincare regimen.
Yes.
And to look your best and feel confident and feel empowered. And by saying that, it doesn't mean you look like you have makeup on. The whole point is to enhance, you know, even liner. Like, for businessmen in meetings, if you have a little bit of liner, like subtle liner, it
brown.
Draws the attention to your eyes.
Mm, yep.
Exactly. And that's what it is, because you want the focus on your eyes. That's where they're going to look, you know? So there's
exactly.
little things like that, that, as I say, and the big thing, even a translucent tinted powder can do
yep.
wonders for a shiny, you know, forehead, or, and you don't feel like you have stuff on. You just learn
exactly.
how to apply it correctly, so you don't look like you have a layer of powder on.
Exactly.
I think that's the one thing too, when a lot of people do makeup, they put their, they do all the stuff, they put their foundation, they put the powder on right away. Well, what happens? Yeah. It hasn't fully dried or hasn't fully set, and now you've got all this, like, yeah, it's not nice.
Yep. It's like, now it looks like, you know, the tectonic plates, they're just
exactly.
it's not there. No.
Exactly. So as we wrap up, what is a nugget of gold you would like to leave our audience?
Ooh, I think the biggest thing is understand that there are going to be people inside of your industry that are going to be dealing with a lot of different things. It might be chronic illness. It might be invisible illness. At the end of the day, it might not be what you think it is, but if they are just doing whatever it is that they're doing to the best of their ability, and it is up to your level of standard, and I put it like that,
yeah,
because mm-hmm. there are going to be ones that you will never know that they are sick.
Yeah,
you will never know. And we do a really good job of making it all about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Take that into consideration, into you might not always be privy to the knowledge that happens behind the scenes. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can still be an advocate for ones that are sick, for ones that are, you know, impaired per se.
Mm-hmm.
Without taking away their level of sustainability for themselves, their level of pride. Just be mindful. I will tell mm-hmm. everybody, be mindful of how you say things, what you say to people, because what might work for you definitely might be considered not helpful to mm-hmm. somebody else.
Exactly. And those are things that, you know, everyone needs to know. That's such a wonderful nugget of gold. I'd love to have you back on so we can go deeper just into that, just to talk about invisible illness, to talk about your own sort of story and your own journey and your own, like, we've talked about a lot of stuff but I think we really need to go deeper into this kind of world that people really don't know, that really don't understand the process, the languaging, the, you know, just what people are going through that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
Like that sort of thing. And like who your clients are and what their things are. Obviously, we're not going to mention names. We're not going to say any
yeah.
of that, but it's just, it may, if this podcast can help somebody with that, that's listening, that says, hey, you know, I saw Julianne Gates on the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast. She had an incredible story, has an incredible story. But as I say, and it's also how you identify. I think we should identify as empowered individuals and not what the diseases are.
Exactly.
You know? It puts dis-ease in your life, but it doesn't mean it has to control you. It doesn't mean it has to. Now we can talk a whole other hour, but, you know what I mean? But I definitely want to, and my people will talk to your people.
Of course.
Totally. We'll get it set up and then we'll do lunch. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and I'm much more, I love to do another little mini one too with your men in makeup or as well, because I think there's a lot of journey there that guys really want to know, but may feel embarrassed about,
yeah.
You know, being on a podcast. We'll make some of these live. We can do them live. This is recorded, pre-recorded live, but we can do a live where people can actually put their questions in and ask, and we'll run this as well live. So if you're watching the live, say live. If you're watching replay, say replay, and put your questions in. And Julianna, I'm sure, is more than happy if you want to reach out to her. If you have any questions, if you're interested in the space, anything you kind of want to know. So we'll kind of jump back into, so again, it's Julianna Gates, so Impaired Artistry Institute, and it's been married with Crippled But Cute. So before we go, I'm not going to let you go. You're like, let me out of it. So you told me a funny story about Crippled But Cute, how the name came about. I want you to share with everyone.
Oh, okay. So when I had my stroke and I was in my wheelchair and I was still beating my face. I was still, you know, putting on my makeup and stuff like that. And so Crippled But Cute started as a hashtag. It started with my husband always coming by, because I was like, if you treat me different, I'm going to be upset. And so he was like, okay, Miss Crippled But Cute. That's me. Mm-hmm. So for me, it made me feel good, because yes, it was like an inside joke, but I really thought about the different ones that it could become a calling card. Mm-hmm. You know, for different ones that are like, I'm crippled, but can I really be like as cute as I want to be? Yes, you can. Oh, be yes, a part of the crippled cutie community today. So that's how my name started. That's how my business got started, from my husband calling me, you know, Crippled But Cute.
But I think it's one of those things too. It's like an icebreaker, because because when you have a name like that,
you and know, then you're upstanding.
Say, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I get that all the time. You're not crippled. I was like, oh no, I had a stroke in 2015.
I'm like, no,
it's okay. Just, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is. It's challenging perceptions, challenging norms, challenging, because people see people that have had stroke that they're more severe and like that. Not to say that any stroke isn't, they all are. Because I've been there too. And I've had my share. So, but you push through and you do what you need and say, living with an invisible disease. A lot of people don't know. They're like, you're so happy all the time. You're this, you're that. Well, we all have a choice.
Exactly.
We can be pitiful. We can be powerful.
We can be upset all the time, and we would have merit to do so.
Exactly.
No, so, point for that.
No. So definitely check out Revo Magazine. Go there. Check it out. See what it is. If you want to see Julianna, she's has her Wix site. So go to Julianna Gates 1 and it's online. And also follow her on Instagram at crippledbutcute_artistry. So you can follow her, see all her great stuff. Like her IG is incredible. So when I say that, it's incredible. I love her stuff. She even has a page on Facebook where you can see all her things. If you know anybody, and I don't like to label anybody, but if you know anybody that would benefit from connecting, please reach out to them. Please let them know, because we have an incredible guest. And if you've stuck with us this long, you know, then definitely take that next step sort of thing. And you can also go to my Facebook page for the Hairstylist Podcast. This is a broadcast out to 58.4 thousand people, and it's on over 40 plus podcast platforms. But you can also see, hear, make comments, do all that kind of stuff on the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast page on Facebook.com. Today's episode has been brought to you by Beauty Industry Cruises, powerful education in beautiful destinations. Stay tuned as more events are being announced. So the thing with that as well, because one of our events, one of the beauty industry cruises events that are coming up, we're going to Greece and Turkey in June. So I know you love that cream from Turkey, those products from Turkey.
I gotta go.
We gotta go. We gotta get on that boat and gotta, you know, it's gonna be an incredible day. It's gonna be amazing times there. There's Santorini, there's Bodrum, there's, I don't know, it's like seven nights, mm-hmm. 8 days. And it's incredible. You get to go to all these destinations. There's even an overnight in Mykonos. I'm probably saying it wrong, but like that sort of thing. You can also check everything out at www.beautyindustrycruises.com. I want to say thank you so much for everybody joining Absolutely. Us. And we're live here. I don't want to go, but I know we have to, but we're definitely going to have you on again and probably again after that. So thank you, everyone, and I'll see you next time.
Yes. Bye.